And so we have to end that excerpt here because I wanted to have a chance to tell you how to connect with our dancer healer, Tariq Sultan. And his website is TariqSultan.net, TariqSultan.net. I found him to be a very gentle soul, very enchanting, and I believe heals through his dance. He's having a fundraising event on Sunday, November 12th from 2 p.m. till 5 p.m. The location is Jiban, New York City, 15 St. Mark's Place in New York, 10003. That's 15 St. Mark's Place, Sunday, November 12th, 2 to 5 p.m. On his website, you can find more about his classes, and I encourage you to do that. Thank you for joining us. Stay tuned for Hour of the Wolf with Jim Freund.
Going through a process.
Oops.
And I saw these women coming into my classes, and
that morning. This is Hour of the Wolf, a weekly program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and, yes, the imagination. With us, well, we'll introduce everybody shortly as we get things set up, but like a phoenix, Omni Magazine. Oh, come on, just stay tuned.
It's the end of the world. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. And I feel fine.
Ellen was only at Wall Street and up in Harlem, and now here on Atlantic Avenue. Rob, say hello.
Hello there, everyone.
Ah, there you are. Hi.
Hey there. Oh, okay.
Did you hear me?
Yes, but I think we have you on lag. I think you're on delay.
Can you hear us?
Can I do anything about that?
We need a better Skype connection. The one here at WBAI, I think the word is allowed by the FCC, sucks. Rob?
I just turned off my video connection. Maybe that'll
help. Yeah, that actually does help, because now I'm not seeing you in about a five-second lag.
All right, so are we good?
Yeah, except there still is the lag, but audio lag is better than video lag.
Yeah, just try to say whatever you would say 2 seconds from now.
Did you hear
you
that?
2 seconds before you ask?
Yes.
Yeah, so just everything you would say 2 seconds earlier.
I'll do my very best.
Yes, exactly, and that's how it works. Because the theme of the first new issue is time. Oh, and that tells me what songs I need to cue up. Okay, good. Exactly. How did that and Simon and Garfunkel?
Oh, yeah.
Hazy Shade of Winter. Yeah. Those are the two great time songs as far as I'm concerned. Okay. Good morning, everybody. This is Hour of the Wolf. My name is Jim Freund. I said that. I should have also said that this is WBAI in New York City, listener-sponsored, non-commercial Pacifica Radio at 99.5 FM and over at WBAI.org and Facebook Live, where you're mostly seeing Pam Weintraub, and to her left, let's move Rob over. Rob is a monitor. There we are. Now you can see Ellen Datlow. Ellen is a frequent visitor to the show, probably next month as well. I have to find my Alice songs, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's a You'll find out. There isn't a person on this show that I've had like last month who doesn't say, you know, Rick Bowes, this one and that one. I was wrong about Cassandra Caw, who she sold something else to you, but it wasn't for the Alice book.
No.
Right. She's amazing.
She was on the show?
Yeah, I had her on last time she was here, thanks to you, mm-hmm. because... the KGB Fantastic Fiction series was all booked, and you sent her to me, and I can't thank you enough, because she was at the New York Review of Science Fiction readings, and she was in-bleeping credible. She was great, and she's a really neat person, and she's going to be around in December, and you'll see her at my place in December, in fact. And I'll probably have her on the show again, because, well, she also knows, what is it called, Muay... Guan karate, or it's a martial art, you know.
Actually, I didn't know that.
Yeah, oh yes, she does. Ellen, tap your microphone, please.
Uh-oh, another one?
Yeah, I think it's dead.
Uh-oh.
I found out why.
You didn't turn them on?
No, I did, but I didn't. But now they're on.
They're on now? You can
hear
me?
Yes, they're on now. Okay. Yes, we can hear you better before we heard everybody through my mic.
Mm-hmm.
But, no, somebody turned... Okay, you see there are these pots,
mm-hmm.
these things. Let me show the Facebook audience. Mm-hmm. See? That's the board. Isn't that sophisticated?
No.
and the pots were all turned up, but then there are these on-off switches, which should always, always, always be on. They weren't.
Mm-hmm.
If I sound like I'm complaining, listeners, this morning, I will do what I said on Facebook. I will whine and moan because I threw up my back. However, while you guys were waiting to come in, Kathy Davis did some mumbo
magic
jumbo. And really works.
Good.
Yeah, I don't believe in it, except my back feels much, much better. It's anti-science.
Mm-hmm.
But it worked, bottom line. Ellen Datlow was and is, again, the fiction editor of Omni Magazine. Everybody who's awake at this hour should, well, it depends if you're listening to California or, you know, some other country. Maybe not, but for New Yorkers, it's 1:15 in the morning, and that means you remember Omni Magazine. How could you not? On every news, I don't care if you read science fiction or if you didn't read science magazines, it was one of the best, and it is one of the best. Now, the Once in Future mag. Pam Weintraub is the executive editor?
I'm the editor-in-chief.
You're the editor-in-chief. I beg pardon. Yeah. And Rob Kilheffer, you're an executive editor. Rob?
That is correct.
Okay. Yeah. Time lag. And I see, this is the pain in everything. Please introduce yourself with title and name.
And
we've not previously met.
Yes, and I am Corey Powell. I'm also an executive editor.
See, I knew there were two executives.
Yeah, there are two of us, two executives. You know, we're all you know, leather lined and, you know, with a lot of velour.
It's just like this radio
station. We're really actually a team. We work together, all four of us.
Yeah, the titles are a little deceptive.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they can often be at print magazines. And that's the amazing thing, is that we're not talking about just a web product. I mean, so many of the great computer magazines of years past still exist online, but that's it. And there was a period when Omni was Omni Online, and that can be found, believe it or not. If you go to archive.org and you want to find something, you know what you're looking for in a particular issue, you can extract it. You can read it and look at it as once it was, except the ads are gone. So, in some ways, an improvement. I, when Omni Online existed, I had the great honor of sharing a spot in the magazine with Ed Bryant, one of the great people of this world who left us sadly. Well, I hope he left happily, but I'm sad that he left us. And I was a chat host, drawing Ellen's ire every time I would ask one particular question, which is, do you prefer the long form or the short form? Do you remember that, Ellen?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I did that for a reason, because I'm trying to collect everybody's answer to that one question, because I have a lot to say on that topic. I have no announcements this morning. I think the only announcement about upcoming stuff is the next KGB Fantastic Fiction. Usually I start out by saying what the next Nursef is, Highline reading that Bill Shun runs out in Astoria, Queens. What's at KGB the third Wednesday of November?
You're asking me?
Yeah.
I can't remember. No, I'm not going to be there.
Matt couldn't remember last week either.
Grady Hendrix is one of the people. He just wrote this. He just had a book come out about the history of horror pulp.
Ooh.
Novels.
Oh, yes. Yeah,
and
Matt
books.
Was telling me about him.
Yeah, that's just that. I went to a launch party, and he's going to be on reading, I assume, from the nonfiction book. And a new writer whose name I can't remember because I don't know him. And I'm not going to meet him next week because I'm not going to be in town. So
yeah.
I'm sorry.
I'm going to have a new
writer. Someone look online.
On my show. Yeah, I would do it, but my phone is being used for the Facebook
right.
Live. And
yeah.
That's what I would use. Pam, You, okay, now from Omni Magazine, you all also put to, then did something that was at the time unheard of and radical, which was came up with the idea of, okay, Omni is going away, so let's start a website that's dedicated to this kind of thing. This is before Sci Fiction, when the Sci-Fi Channel mm-hmm. took on Ellen as the fiction editor, and the very year that she got more Hugo and Nebula nominees than anybody else, they shut it down. Makes sense. But it's true. That's the year that There's a Hole in the City came out, which is mm-hmm. still one of my favorite things to come out of sci fiction. But you came up with the idea that get some people online to buy, at the time was mostly banner ads, if people remember the phrase, and support, try to support, a website with original fiction and articles and reviews, and that was called EventHorizon.com. And it was sadly a little before its time, because today I think it would be a smash hit like IO9, which actually doesn't publish fiction, does it?
Right. Well, we also had the problem that we didn't have anyone doing ad sales, so we couldn't. We got sales, but we couldn't collect the money, basically, because we had no one.
Those were such early, early days.
They really were. You were pioneers.
We created event the publication you're referring to, Event Horizon, in the aftermath of Omni. We launched Omni Internet.
Wasn't it Omni Online?
Omni Online was the CompuServe version of Omni, and actually after the magazine folded, we launched what we called Omni Internet, and Omni Internet was fully Omni.
Yeah.
The whole magazine, and the idea of it was at the time, in terms of an online publication, was to create a completely interactive, living, organic kind of writing and journalism for the web, something that would be that would live in this medium and be really different than what lives in print mm-hmm. formats.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that's where we started the internet, the chats online, and the round yeah. robins and things like that.
Now, I was used to chats because I did that for Ziff Davis, mm-hmm. where we had people like Bill Gates and a lot yeah. of the movers and shakers of the computer industry.
And we also created, we ran two conventions, online conventions.
That's right.
For I can't remember. Well, for Jennifer Brell's. I forget what it was called.
Avon EOS.
EOS.
We had live blogging before there was the word blogging around. We send people to various places to cover events and write stories.
As you said, it was just a little before its time.
But it was just a bit before its time.
Well, exactly.
Omni was the first magazine to go fully digital, wasn't it?
I'm not sure.
At least the first major magazine.
It was the first non-computer magazine
yeah.
to go fully digital.
I mean, what was really frustrating is that we had the audience of Omni, but and we you know they had ads on the bot. You know, if someone had managed, if the advertising department had bothered to actually implement advertising on our pages, we probably could have actually made some money from Omni Online. You know,
yeah, there were a lot of.
We had a lot of meetings with some very major companies. I was involved in a lot of those meetings with.
Pam,
I
could
went
you
to,
pull the mic closer
I, we
to
went,
you?
We went down to.
At, oh, no, don't you go to the mic. Let the at, mountain come to you.
At the time, we went down to Detroit and met with the car companies. We met, this is for the Omni Internet. And we were on the verge of really lining up a number of true sponsorships. But unfortunately, the parent company, General Media, ran into trouble. And after Omni's most passionate supporter, Kathy Keaton, who was Bob Guccione's wife, died, there was just really not...
Young.
Well, she was 58, and she died of cancer. There was not a lot of interest in the company in in keeping this pioneering effort going. And remember, this was so early. We were virtually the only ones out there doing this.
As I say, there was a couple of computer magazines, and that's tech magazines were totally in those days.
Yeah.
Tech was just computers.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have gadgets the way we do now, and phones, mobile. So the computer magazines, they were there, but there was not a whole lot of crossover in the audience. A few of the writers, God help us, Jerry Pournelle, he was one of the few people who actually crossed over. He had Byte.com, and Byte.com's BYTE stayed alive only for the people who wanted to read his column, which eventually got called a blog. But for him, there was virtually no difference. Corey, were you involved with Omni in those days? Because I was only peripherally involved. I worked as a flunky. Well, not a flunky. I was an online host, and I helped on that Avon EOS. Mm-hmm. EOS, Rob?
EOS.
EOS.
I think it was EOS.
EOS. It's the goddess of dawn. Greek mythology.
Oh, so
it was
along with Hour of the Wolf.
It was the imprint.
Yes, it was perfect for your show.
Yeah, absolutely. Because for those people who don't know, Hour of the Wolf refers to the morning twilight, which in Sweden, which is one of the primary sources, the twilights are very long, like 2 hours long, 3 hours long. They really are. They really are. So it's a very important time. Check out the movie. It's on... It's actually very easy to find. I think it's one of the few that's on both Amazon and Netflix. Hour of the Wolf, directed by Ingmar Bergman.
All right.
Yeah, one of his lesser films. But a lesser film by Ingmar Bergman is a better film than many. So, Corey, were you involved with the previous incarnation?
I'm something of a rogue element here.
Because I know your byline.
Right. So when Print Omni folded, eventually the Print Omni subscription list, basically the official corporate existence of Omni, was absorbed into Discover Magazine, and then I in turn was an editor at Discover Magazine. So I had always loved Omni. By working at Discover, I sort of felt like I had sort of taken on a little bit of the Omni soul, because I was now being read by former Omni subscribers, most of whom were pretty pissed off at getting Discover Magazine instead, which is a very different beast, and I don't think
is that me? I hope that's not me.
That's Rob.
Oh, okay.
I don't think they felt like it was continuity, but I was trying in my heart to do some continuity. And then there was a further connection that Bob Guccione and Kathy Keaton, who created Omni Magazine, Bob Guccione Jr. For a period of time was the CEO of Discover Magazine. So I was working
I never knew that Discover was affiliated with the ownership at all. I knew Jr. because when WBAI was at 505 8th Avenue, Spin Magazine was at 505
right.
8th Avenue. And so he would come down and spin discs occasionally. So I met him a couple of times, and I thought he was actually very cool.
So there was this sort of this funny arc. Bob Jr. and Bob Sr. had a falling out over Spin Magazine, over how to run it and who was in control of it. And they did not speak to each other for, I think it was 17 years. And then while Bob Jr. was, I was working for him at Discover Magazine, the two of them had a rapprochement. They had a father-son bonding moment. And Bob Jr. invited his dad over to, like, look at Discover Magazine. Look, I'm doing something that's kind of like Omni. This whole sort of, Omni reconciliation, Guccione family tableau was all playing out around me at Discover. So I sort of feel like I've always been kind of in the in the orbit of Omni, even though this is the first time I can say that I'm officially a member of the Omni staff. Oh,
you know, what happens is that I was working with Corey at Discover. At Discover, Corey was the editor-in-chief, and I was the executive editor. And at a certain point, after Bob Jr. left Discover, Omni was sold to a company in Wisconsin called Kalmbach. And so we in the New York...
Discover was sold.
I mean, Discover, I'm sorry. Discover, pardon me. Discover was sold to Kalmbach. And we in the New York office were saying, you know, we were all disbanding. We were all going on to other things. And Corey came to me and he said, what do you want to do more than anything in the world? And I said, more than anything in the world, I want to restart Omni Magazine. And so he said, well, go and try to do that. So I did some investigating, and I found out that the trademark for Omni had been abandoned. And I was able to pick it up. I was able to pick up the trademark for Omni for $300.
Wow.
Yeah. So and we split it, so it wasn't so bad.
We split it. Corey paid half, yeah. And Corey and I decided to go in to business trying
Can
to...
Can I take a piece of that?
Corey and I decided to go into business trying to relaunch Omni, and eventually...
How long ago is that?
That was 2012.
Yeah.
And so then...
It's a five-year journey.
It's been a long journey, and eventually, at a certain point, midway through, Rob and Ellen joined us because, of course, they're
we're getting the band back together, man.
Yeah.
On a mission from God.
We needed their talent, and also needed their financial help, both things. And obviously, we needed to reproduce the DNA. So that took us to the point where finally the parent company, the original parent company of Omni, Penthouse, bought our trademarks. And they, PGMI, which is Penthouse, is relaunching Omni.
So it really is putting the band back together. It's not only the staff, but the whole kind of corporate structure with very different people.
With people who can now sell ads.
With very different people, and it's a very different age, but there's sort of a whole legacy at work here.
Rob, I'm sorry, I asked you a question about 3 seconds ago, and I missed what my question was. You were saying, Rob?
Oh, no, I was just pitching in there about the totally different people running PGMI today. It's the same name and the same idea, but I don't think any of the people we worked with at General Media are involved with the new company.
Ah, okay. Rob, tell us a little of your journey with Omni and Event Horizon. You were sort of the web king in very early days of there being web doyen and stuff.
Yeah, king of a little tiny, tiny kingdom like Andorra or something. I just happened to be somebody who had some computer skills who was on the staff. And so when it came time to do some internet things, I was the obvious person to turn to for some of the coding and support like that. And it was the right time. It unfortunately just a little too early. So we were very excited. We thought that the Omni internet experience, despite not sufficient support in the company in terms of ad sales and so on, we thought it demonstrated that this was a viable notion. And that's what led us to launch Event Horizon. And I think, as you say, we were right. We just weren't right at the right time. Today, it's proven to be obviously a functional model, though no one's making a ton of money yet, I don't think. But they're making more money than we did then. I think we probably cleared $400 or something on the banner ads.
I think for a while Gawker was doing okay until they stepped in something hulky.
Yeah. I think, you know, we seem to be on the edge without any doubt of people figuring out how to make viable companies out of these things. But that's how long it took for anyone to reach that level of success. So we were way out in front, and it was kind of fun, but it just wasn't ready yet. I mean, just, you remember how it was a little bit that we, to get chat guests on, you often had to get them on the phone and type for them.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so even your guests weren't online yet. That should have told us something, I think, but it was still
right. I remember
well worth
clearly
doing.
In the case of some of the guests
Silverberg.
That I was interviewing. Yes, exactly. Case in point. he had to have...
Someone type for him.
Exactly.
A lot of them did.
We were interviewing major scientists that couldn't get on the internet. I mean, this we started doing this in 1996. It was so early. It was so early on. And even, you know...
For people's... .com became a usable thing given out of the hands of the National Science Foundation and turned to commercial websites. It was virtually unused before that in August of 95.
Right. So it was to go back to that EOS character, it was the dawn time. And so we were very free to do kind of make it up ourselves, which was fun. But it was well before we were going to find any way to get enough ad support or any other kind of income, clearly, to make it run.
Yeah, but we did get attention. I mean, stuff. Was it unidentified? Wait, one of Radio Waves won the World Fantasy Award.
Yep.
That was, I think, the first online piece of fiction that ever won the World Fantasy Award.
It took a long time for the various awards, the Nebulas, the Hugos, World Fantasy, to acknowledge that online was a legitimate platform.
Not as long as it took for Omni to be appreciated.
Right.
I mean, it took years for Omni magazine to get, except for the first two, you know, I mean, George R. R. Martin won for Sand Kings and Wave Quest and Dragon, but for
now
years...
How's he doing nowadays?
Oh, he's doing terribly.
Yeah.
But for decade, you know, for at least a decade after that, took ages for Omni to get, you know, award nominations after that. And that was, I think, partly people followed Ben Bova from Analog to Omni.
Yeah.
And that's how that happened.
Yeah.
But I think after that, for at least 10 years, we didn't have any nominations.
I did a little first.
Very few.
Well, I had done some first readings, slush pile, for
which
Bova.
Which I had no idea.
Yeah. At Analog. And then
Analog.
Omni too. First at Analog, okay. Then later at Omni. Yeah.
See, I didn't even know he had a reader until I started. He never said anything.
He was just behind in stuff, and so I would come in like a day a week, and he would buy me lunch once, unforgettably, at the Algonquin Hotel.
Nice.
And what's the name of that room where the famous round table?
The Oak Room?
The Vicious, yes.
I had him and a boss take me there, and we had bouillabaisse, first and last time I ever had bouillabaisse. We talked so much
I think
I never got a chance to eat it because we were just talking so much.
Yeah. But I was just...
It looked good.
I could feel the history. I could feel Alexander Wolcott's anti-Semitism coming through the walls and the hair of Georges Kaufman, whose hair was worse than mine, you know, which is saying something. So, I did some stuff there. The person who I never, ever met, and I'm sorry for that, because at the same time you, Ellen, were there, was Sheckley.
Mm-hmm.
I never met Sheckley.
You never met him?
I never met him. Of all the... I've interviewed and met...
He had parties, I'm surprised, that you never got to any of them.
No, I didn't know about them. One time, I was standing in the elevator of the building you were in near City Core Plaza, as I recall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was where it was at one time.
Yeah.
641 3rd Avenue or something.
Yeah, and I was waiting for you in the lobby. I don't remember for what particular purpose. And I was just there, and you came down and said, did you talk to Bob? Who had just apparently come out of the elevator and was there talking to somebody named Elisa, who seemed to be his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, no, she's going to be on the show in March. And I said, no, Bob who? And he said, Robert Sheckley. And I you know, like in a movie, I went on this search, except I had no idea. Well, I had a vague idea what he looked like. Now I've got...
Well, for those
so
who don't know, he was
Ziva.
The fiction editor for about a year and a half before I, between Ben Bova and me.
And for those...
And I was his associate.
Yeah, and for those people who don't know his fiction, Bob Sheckley's fiction is just one of my all-time favorites, because I grew up with the digests of the 60s and went back to the ones FNSF and Galaxy and all that, which is his glory days, and Playboy. He published quite a few things in Playboy magazine, and just always one of my favorite writers. And I'm so glad to have met the rest of his family now. Again, initially through you, I miss. You had a reader at KGB Fantastic Fiction, who somebody named Elisa Quitney, who I looked up and turned out she wrote romance stuff.
Now she writes other stuff. She also wrote comic books, graphic novels, and she also wrote a mystery.
Now she is editor of Liminal Comics.
She is.
Okay. She works with some guy named Neil Gaiman.
Is she still working with him?
I don't know if she is at the moment, but she was instrumental in his last published book, Norse Mythology. Mm-hmm. And she's prominently thanked and listed in the acknowledgments. Mm-hmm. And it was really her holding the whip saying, Neil, do this.
I'm sure.
And he did, apparently. So she what she read, which I have, that's one recording that I do have, this wonderful story that she read at that KGB. She's a fabulous writer. She's worked on, Sandman. She worked on a couple of the Sandman books that came out. So she's written comics directly with Neil. So there's shared writing and editing, I believe, between them. One way or the other, she's a great writer on her own. And I met her by attending the KGB Fantastic Fiction Series, third Wednesday of every month. The evil twin sister of the New York... Rob, what are you doing?
Typing.
Are you hearing something?
That's better than me. I was doing an interview with Matt Kressel and someone else, and someone said, Matt said, are you filing your nails? I said, yes, you can hear it? I was so embarrassed. I was Skyping. I said, you can hear me? He said, it was for some people who were going to have a special, they were going to use that part. They're going to cut it out except for the Patreon people. It's like, you can hear me on the Emery board? Oh, God, how embarrassing. Yes, Robbie can hear you typing. At least you're not using an Emery board.
So since Rob is 3 seconds...
I was trying to turn off notifications so you wouldn't hear any bleeps or bloops.
Okay.
So I caused the problem I was trying to eliminate.
WBAI is full of bleeps. But all that aside, let's talk about where we are today. The first new issue is out. It looks incredible, as it always has.
Yeah, maybe I should hold it up so everybody
actually,
can see.
Actually, yes. Let's...
Vanna White.
There we are. Everybody on Facebook Live. There you go. Only, you know, you shouldn't rely on this. To get a really good look at the cover, you go to your local newsstand and you buy one.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Available at a newsstand near you.
We hope.
Yeah, we want to mention that this issue of Omni, we owe a lot to the new CEO of Penthouse, Kelly Holland, who's been tremendous advocate and supporter and totally enthusiastic about coming out with this brand under her banner again, and this first issue, which is a collector's edition. Is really truly true to the DNA of Omni, and it's got fabulous art, it's got great fiction, and it covers culture, we've got a story on how a multi-generation space arc will reach a new Earth, we've got a feature on how we can possibly build time machine We've got an interview with Elizabeth Blackburn on how the longevity researcher on how we can live to 150. So it's really
also that was always one of Cuccioni's pet projects was long life.
Right,
longevity. He even had a magazine.
Yeah, he had a magazine called Longevity. That's how much he loved longevity.
There's
also an interview with, I think, a science fiction writer people might have heard of. Oh, yeah, William Gibson. Yeah, yeah.
And Elizabeth Hand conducted the interview.
Yeah, there you go.
If you don't remember who Bill Gibson is, there's a mnemonic for that. So now, is each and every issue going to be themed? Like this issue is time?
For now.
Yes.
That is the plan.
That is the plan, and so thus far we're doing quarterlies. We're doing print quarterlies, and Penthouse is launching a website. There will be a Zinio version so that people can get
Zinio. I haven't heard of them in a while. Yeah.
A digital subscription, if they want, people are going to be able to subscribe. But right now, the magazine is on the newsstand. It's in virtually every Barnes & Noble. It's in many, many supermarkets across the U.S. and Canada, in Walmart,
airports.
A few airports. It's not widely distributed in airports. It's
really
not this issue. Hopefully for the future.
Okay, because Skiffy Books, science fiction books, Doubleday. Was very reliant on airports for sales.
Right.
The parodies in the airports have it. On this issue, Hudson News does not. We're working on that.
Yeah, because Hudson News is, I don't want to say a monopoly, but they're in many places.
Yes, and we love them. They're wonderful people.
Need to love you more.
We wish them all the best. That doesn't necessarily make them easy to work with.
Yeah. Okay. Well, comment from me, not asking for comment from anybody who's a guest. My knowledge is that with both book publishing and magazine publishing, distributorship, the middle people are often a major bottleneck to sales.
Well, we happen to have a great distributor for Omni, Curtis. They're one of the biggest.
Oh, okay. Curtis Publishing is great.
Curtis distributors, and they are probably the second largest distributor in the U.S. of magazines.
Right, and we had worked with them at Discover Magazine also.
Which is the first? Is it Ingram?
I don't know who the first is. But you know, Curtis has done the math. They've looked at all of the demographics. They've looked at all of the places where people are most likely to buy Omni, and that's where they placed it. And they do have they're not being random about it. They have a science behind what they're doing, and so.
Yeah, I guess what I really meant here wasn't really the distributor, but the end sales. Because when you get to huge companies that own so many retail stands, that's really where there's, you know, for years it was, if you couldn't get into, let's use somebody defunct, Borders, then you felt it.
Right. Well, it's in every Barnes & Noble, Target, CVS, you know, all the places.
Amazon.
Well,
isn't
I'm not.
It on Amazon?
I'm not. Don't think it's on Amazon yet, because I'm sure it will
be.
Yo,
Jeff.
But you know,
our good friend Jeff Bezos.
Penthouse is still. They had to get a first issue out before they could create subscriptions, and before they could get it, up on Amazon. But we do have a mailing list on our website. Although the website is being relaunched, and the
URL for that website?
Well, the URL is omnimagazine.com. It's still an old version of the website that is being redone. But you can get the mailing list from there, or you can go to the Facebook page. That's even a better way to get to the mailing list. And Facebook page is Real Omni, and maybe you can.
It's actually linked from. Both my webpage and the WBAI webpage.
Right, the Facebook page?
The Facebook page.
Well, that would be the better way until the website relaunches.
So if people, I have my personal site, there's an Hour of the Wolf site, but we're doing the I keep wanting to say live stream because the reading series I do some live stream. This is Facebook Live. And where I, if you're on the Facebook Live page, just under Jim Freund, F-R-E-U-N-D, you will see a link there. Or you can go to the, just look for Omni Magazine in the Facebook search bar. And it
it's
will
real,
take
it's
you
real,
there.
Yeah, it's real. It's Facebook name is Real Omni.
Real
and,
Omni,
and,
yes.
But
because there have been some fake Omnis. Yeah.
There have.
Right, there have. And so many fan sites
omnipotent.
As well. So many.
And for the record, yes, I could buy a copy on Amazon at treble the price. They have three issues. November 78, Volume 1, Number 2. They don't have Number 1. I do, at home. They have the March 82 issue. Oh, on Kindle only.
Uh-huh.
That figures, Amazon. And Winter 2017, sold by various.
How much are they charging for it?
Not supposed to say on the radio, non-commercial radio.
I see.
But
can you tell us if it's, is it Amazon themselves selling it, or is it some of their marketplace independent sellers?
Yes, it's individual people who bought it as a collector's item.
We suggest that people go to the Facebook page and sign up for the mailing list. They will be able to order this at a fair price from PGMI, the publisher.
Yeah, and I
without a markup, though, they may have to pay for the postage.
Yeah, right. I mean, this is the collector's edition, mm-hmm. and
you can see the price on the cover.
Right on the cover.
Yeah, look at that.
There it is. Okay, yes, it's under $11.
So
it's,
what is it?
Attractively priced for a 120-page magazine.
So the ones on the Amazon, on Amazon higher?
Well, yes, they're higher. They're higher.
Substantially?
No, actually not. But I can't vouch for their condition.
Right.
And you're buying from a third party. And whenever you buy from a third party on Amazon, do check the reputation of the seller.
We suggest you sign up for our mailing list.
Yes, buy it from Omni, for God's sake.
You'll be able to order this magazine. You'll be able to get a subscription or look for it on the newsstand.
Friend in Bulgaria who's a donor to WBAI and just watching on Facebook right now, I'm going to mail him one.
But honestly, the mailing
from the U.S. to Bulgaria will probably cost more.
Well, that person can get a digital subscription.
Ooh.
Soon. Yeah, I mean, the loyalty that we had on Facebook was actually really helpful as we were building up to the print relaunch. So, showing up there, joining that group, you'll get, we're posting Omni content there. That's where you'll find out, information about which newsstands to look for it at. If you want to buy it, when we do subscriptions, you'll be able to find out about subscriptions, digital subscriptions. So, that loyalty there has been really helpful for us, and we're doing what we can to kind of keep the flow of information going back.
Now, one of the things that Omni does, which really nobody else did in the same way as Omni, was it was a good combination of science fact and science fiction, that it was about what can be done, what may be done, and fiction about what could be done. So
that's
I really think that's the greatest part of the DNA.
Look, Omni covered the future, and its métier is the imagination.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, exactly. I have
one of the things that we noticed, I think that Pam and Corey noticed back when they acquired the trademarks, is that no one had done it since. There's not an existing other magazine online or in print that has had the same or even a similar combination to offer. So it seemed like a good thing to bring back.
The niche was wide open.
Yeah, it really was. I was surprised Analog didn't pick up on that years later, being such a hard science fiction magazine, that they would have upped their science, but they haven't really.
It's still primarily a fiction magazine.
Yeah, which is fine. It's what they were. But I'm just saying that with the former demise of Omni magazine, it was wide open. There was still, when people were telling me that it was coming back, and when I would tell other people that it was coming back, all I've gotten was far bleeping out. The the enthusiasm for it is
We gave away
amazing.
200 copies of World Fantasy, and apparently they went in like 20 minutes.
Yeah, I would think so.
And people were like flocking around the cart and trying to get them, you know, and they said, no, you can't yet. I mean, luckily the person, the co-chair saved me a few because I wouldn't have. Oh, actually, I did see a pile, and then they went away really quickly.
Yeah. And the I mean, I have the first issue, and I have what was the last issue. I probably have a couple in between, but those two, I had a huge flood, which I told you about off air. Those were bagged, and they survived the great flood of my basement. A lot of stuff did not. My Tolkien first edition did not. Really annoying. And then I found out that my first edition of Lord of the Rings, it's just anecdotal, is worth about, you go to eBay and you look at what people have actually paid for it. That's how the insurance company, rental insurance, what they did was, let's see what really sells for, $180 of the British first edition of Lord of the Rings. You think, well, only $180? And I took a look at one of my issues of Doctor Strange that survived, which I do not have the same love for, $370. That's disparity, folks. So, should we take a brief break? Refill on water and stuff like that. And I think, who was it who determined what the song will be? Not that there would have been much choice, but it has come today. And Rob, you're on the same potentiometer. I didn't want to say you're on the same pot as the music. So if you have a way of muting your Skype.
Here I go.
Yeah, or you can sing along with it. I made the big mistake of doing that recently. My first Facebook Live, I was playing something, I was singing along with it, thinking, oh, the phone's like 5 feet from me, nobody will hear, I go home, and it's like, you can't hear the song.
Oh, no.
You can only hear me. So, folks, this is the Chambers Brothers. And this is WBAI in New York City, listener-sponsored, non-commercial Pacifica Radio at 99.5 FM. And people should remember that this is the what issue of Omni Magazine? It's the winter issue. I got the habit. Okay, that didn't work. Let me redo that, because it didn't segue the way it was supposed to, because Jim's trying to be clever. Okay, let's just roll back the delay, as it were, and Jim will once again say that this is the what? Okay, let me get that properly done. Now it's working good. This is the what issue? The 2017 issue of Omni Magazine? And once again, it's time, it's winter, it's the Bangles. While I looked around for my possibilities, I was so hard to please. Look around, leaves are brown, and the sky is a hazy shade. You've got planned, carry your cup in your hand. The ground leaves are brown, and the sky is a hazy shade of winter. Hang on to your hopes, my friend. That's an easy thing to say, but if your hopes should pass away, simply pretend that you can build them again. Look around. Grass is high, feels alright. It's the springtime of my life. Seasons change with the scenery, weaving time in a tapestry. Won't you stop and remember me? Okay, had there been, you see, now this is what I don't like, is like, why this particular software that I am using, legally, may I add, it just goes, whatever you do, it goes to the next song in the queue, even if I didn't request it, because they have all kinds of suggestions. If you like this, you'll like that. Say again?
It's trying to read your mind.
It is, but if you could read my mind, you'd be Glenn Campbell. This is WBAI in New York City, listener-sponsored, non-commercial Pacifica Radio, broadcasting at 99.5 FM and available at WBAI.org. Rob, bring up your Skype again.
I'm back.
You're back, great. So our guests here, yes, Ellen?
Gordon Lightfoot, not Glenn Campbell.
Thank you.
Even
when I was saying it, I thought I got it wrong. I did tell listeners before that I'm in great pain. Literally. I pulled a muscle. For the second time in 27 years, I missed a Nursef reading last night. I couldn't do it. I couldn't just go and even watch. I was in horrible, racking pain. And actually, Kathy Davis, who preceded me here, did something very unscientific that really seemed to pull a lot of the pain away. But this is one of the few moments in the last couple of days I'm not on a Hugh Laurie. So I'll be seeing my doctor tomorrow for more. Anybody who watched House know what I mean. You all watched House, right? So you know what Hugh Laurie is. No, it's a painkiller. Hugh Laurie played a doctor who's addicted to painkillers. Mm-hmm. Ellen, tap your mic again. Yeah, it's on.
Yep.
Yeah, but
maybe I'm not close enough.
That's the deal. Be friends. Be good friends.
Hello, Mike.
And it says hi back. That's the scary part when it actually does that. This is Hour of the Wolf. My name is Jim Freund. With us are basically the entire executive staff of Omni Magazine on Skype. We have Rob Kilheffer. We have each of you introduce yourselves.
Ellen Datlow.
I'm Pam Weintraub.
Now you get closer to your mic. Okay. That's one of the reasons I wanted you to all.
Okay. Pam Weintraub.
Oh, there you go. And Corey?
And I'm Corey Powell.
Okay, very good. And, we were discussing something off the air that I said would be good to discuss on the air. Oh, by the way, and if people want, they can go to Facebook Live and watch our guests, except for Rob, because he's ethereal. And I was going to make a bad Wheaties joke there. Ethereal, like Wheaties. Anyway, sorry. It's the pain. I have to share the pain.
Okay.
Wish they'd take me away.
This is my daughter's favorite new joke. How do you think the unthinkable?
Molly Brown?
With an iceberg.
Oh.
Ba-dum. That wouldn't be bad if she weren't 32. But, no. But at any rate, we were discussing something off air. That we said, we should discuss that.
About how do you... Pushing to the edge of science, but not going over the edge.
Yes, exactly. One of our Facebook chatters was saying that Omni used to do a good deal of fringe science, but then again, so did or does Analog. And you're not taking it there anymore, are you?
No, we're not going to be covering the woo.
Be friends with your mic.
We're not going to be covering the woo anymore. We feel that the fiction takes Omni out on to the far edge, and we're staying away from the UFOs and all of the. It's 2017. It's almost 2018. We have a very different zeitgeist now, and we are trying to cover the culture, the zeitgeist, and this current Omni is going to have a harder edge to it.
Yeah, I think there's something in the culture that has changed, because years ago I would tell people, I do a radio show about science fiction, and they would immediately perk up and say, you mean like flying saucers and stuff? I said, fiction. And there was this association, partly because Fred Pohl and Lester Del Rey were regular guests on the Long John Nebbels show, which is a wonderful radio show. But all that Long John wanted to discuss were UFOs and things like that. And then they made the mistake of talking about an ufologist named Philip Klass. And for those people, yes, spells it the same way. There was one of the great, great, great science fiction writers of all time, a fellow by the name of William Ten, a pseudonym for Philip Klass. And so some people conflated that, thinking it was the same. Suffice it to say, there were people who did not know, and I hope there are now people who do, I hope they know are no longer as prevalent, know that UFOs are not even fiction. They are fantasy, for the most part. They and they're so I think that the era in which you were working may be one of the reasons that the woo was was in the past.
We live in a much more skeptical age now, and beyond that, it was all that woo that killed Omni. It was putting UFOs on the cover every month in 1994 and 1995. That was the death of Omni, and we're certainly not going down that path anymore.
Yeah.
Absolutely not. That's not where we are.
I think that it was harmful to the feel for the magazine, or, I mean, not totally, because there are those people. There was a market. But even by then, it was starting to disappear, wasn't it? The craze for the flying saucer
craze.
We
don't live in that era anymore. If people are interested in fantasy and fiction, we have here the greatest fiction editor of short genre fiction in the world. That's our fiction editor, and they can read it to their heart's content in Omni, but we're not covering that as journalism. Absolutely not.
I agree with you, throwing in the caveat that I work for John Joseph Adams, but another editor. The only time, like, Ellen doesn't get in there or something, John wins. And otherwise, it's Ellen on all, deservedly, on all the awards. I mean, but I have to say that things, that's the damn fax machine. Tell you what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, of course. I said it was going to happen at 1:10. Welcome to Eastern Standard Time. speaking of time, I see I had a perfectly good question and thing. Yeah, we are in an era where I saw when I say somebody, this was the JPL, the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, had a photo, not a photo, but a rendering of the universe. They really did. This is in the New York Times, I believe, this week. It's pretty recent. And in an era when they can graphically imagine an accurate theory, if there's such a thing as an accurate theory, a credible theory of what the universe looks like, who needs the woo? That's like...
That is woo.
Right. I mean, and that's really at the heart of what this Omni is about. We live in an age of such skepticism and yet such incredible wonders. And so the idea is, we really want to explore the outer limits of what's real. Let's say the outer possibilities of of where the real science and real technology is going, and then the fiction lets us kind of open our minds even beyond that.
Yeah.
We have a one essay, an issue called it's called A Provocation, where we have an expert talk about theories on the outer edge. But
what changes a provocation to prevarication?
Right. Well, for example, in this issue, we have Robert Lanza talk about his theory of how we might travel through time. That's the outer edge that we're going to go to in journalism, because we're not covering pseudoscience.
Yeah, but there is a book which covers a lot of science fiction in it, a science book by James Gleick, Gleick, called Time Travel: A History. And I've read it twice now, and only came out last year. Great, great, great book. But of course, I would say a good third of the book is about science fiction. It's about the history of science fiction, time travel and science fiction. But it does, what is the element that sort of, but doesn't travel backwards in time? Not an element, but an atomic.
Tachyons?
Thank you. Tachyons. Tacky of me to forget. that some scientists have used that within science fiction. And I think in speculation.
It's a Star Trek favorite that whenever you need a plot device, you and sort of create a tachyon beam that does something.
Oh, I thought it was always, you know, as long as it's in subspace, it's fair game.
Yeah, you can send the tachyons into subspace. You know, you can just, you know how it is in Star Trek. You just kind of like keep layering these things on top of each other until your plot is done.
I've seen actual scripts and what they and what they would do via John Ordover. And what they would do is they would have the dialogue and all that to further the story. And then there would be just a little bracket. And in there it said technobabble.
Right.
And they really. And that's where the tachyons, I guess, came in.
Yeah, you sort of route them through the main deflector into subspace.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and out the port nacelle.
That's what we do here at WVAI, which is why Rob is 3 seconds ahead of the rest of us.
I thought subspace was supposed to be better than this.
Well, only people buy a sub to WBAI or to Omni. Okay, that was pretty limp. At any rate, what are some of the themes that people might expect to see over the next few quarters?
Okay, well, we're going to be doing an issue that's going to look at the area of artificial intelligence, and I don't want to give too much away, but we're going to be looking at the major themes that that are culturally relevant, the major areas where science and culture intersect. And where life and science are most disruptive, and those are going to be our special issues.
Mm-hmm. And it seems like every issue, especially while you're quarterly right now, every issue is a special issue, really, isn't it? Because
that's right. That
you're putting a quarter of a year into it.
That's right.
Which means that it's got love and care going into each one of those. The AI thing is something that, again, talking about Zeitgeist, in the last 2 years, what was the name of that movie with Alicia Vikander?
Ex Machina.
Ex Machina, brilliant film. Blade Runner 2049 very few characters in there aren't at least suspected of being AI of one form or another. There are others in my head, but people know what they are. The AIs are out there. It's very much becoming a trope again, only now a more realistic one in the way that it views it. It's not just, is data a machine or
it's going to revolutionize our lives completely.
And it's in the newspapers every day. There was a headline in the Times just today about one of the major banks, Deutsche Bank. Mm-hmm. Somebody high up in Deutsche Bank gave the soundbite, or in the case of the New York Times, a print bite, saying that X many of their employees are basically abacus machines. Mm-hmm. And don't need to be doing that when AI can do a much better job. So there's a downside, but there's a lot of upside to it.
Right, and we're immersed in it, and we're so immersed in it that often you don't even notice the beginnings of it. You know, the predictive algorithms that are telling you what song you want to listen to next.
Well,
the predictive text on your phone, before we have self-driving cars, there's already a lot of predictive things.
GPS is an AI.
There's a lot of rudimentary AI that's already kind of baked into our lives, and that's part of what we're doing here is taking a step back. You know, we're immersed in these trends. Sometimes it's hard to even notice how radically our lives are changing.
Yeah,
and so that's part of what we're going to be exploring in this issue is sort of what if you take these things that are happening right now and you really follow them to their ends, where does it take us?
Yeah, somebody writes a viewer on Facebook writes AI makes me laugh because if the AI develops to potential, it won't tell us about it. Right. And they have let's try that out. Okay, Google. Now the phone doesn't want to do its thing because that's what's operating the Facebook Live.
Right. It's like if you ask Siri, Siri, are you conscious? You're not going to get a straight answer.
I just woke up. Yeah. Yeah, something like that. But
it's not going to say sterilize. Yeah,
exactly.
Eventually, just get the I'm sorry, Dave. I can't do that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Exactly. Right. I really think you should take a stress pill.
Yeah, he never did say that, did he? Before he put him into a vacuum, I don't mean a Hoover, folks.
Yes.
At any rate, I can barely reach the phone. But if you would like to call up and speak with our guests this morning, the telephone number in New York City is area code 347-335-0818. We only have, this being such a high-tech place, one working phone line. So, if you know, I think it, you hear it ring, but nothing answers.
Do people have questions on Facebook?
Actually, they can. They tend, being Facebook, to have more comments. But yes, if you are on Facebook Live, you can ask a question there. It's just hard for me to be sort of operating. I can't even see the phone at the same, the call-in phone at the same time that I turned off my mic instead of Ellen's. Okay, your mics are up again. Anytime you want me to turn down your mic, just give me throw cut signals. But one person says, just write an article on Amazon. You get the whole predictive thing going there. Somebody else says, will the new magazine have the kind of culture columnists as the old magazine? It's the same magazine, people. Yes. Just, you know.
Yeah, we do have culture columnists. We have in this current issue, Elizabeth Hand is writing about and interviewing William Gibson. We have Paul Levinson talking.
He's one of the best in this kind of thing.
Talking about time travel TV. So, absolutely.
Yeah. And I think that's a very important thing today because that's where a lot of the conversation is going. It annoys me that when I see a headline about science fiction is doing this or that's going on in science fiction, it might even be in a reputable pub like The Guardian, formerly the Manchester Guardian, something like that, where they do good reviews of science fiction books. I read the article. It's all about movies. Well, not one book will be mentioned.
Rob may want to address this because he's the one who's really our culture editor.
Yeah, this is one of the other things that Omni was unusual in doing in the past. It didn't just merge science fact and science fiction, but it also covered science fiction culture, or the way that science fiction shapes the culture and grows out of the culture. And of course, they're doing that again. It's far more the case today than it was in our first incarnation. And we do plan, as Pam just mentioned, we plan to rely on a lot of science fiction writers or people who are deeply immersed in the science fiction world to bring that kind of analysis to our readers in a way that's accessible. You don't have to be hip deep in it, but our writers will be, so that you'll get the real story. You'll get relevant references, like you're saying, to all the things that you would expect if you are a longtime fan. You'd expect to hear. You'd expect to have referred to in an article like the time travel piece, as Paul did for us. So it's very much a part of what Omni always did and what it's going to do again.
Oh, Andrew, I'm sorry. See, I'm looking at the Facebook and ignoring the telephone. We have a phone call. Howdy, you're on the radio.
Good morning.
Good morning, Robert.
Everyone. Hello, Ellen.
Hi. Hi, Robert.
To the point, Robert.
What?
To the point.
I'd like to ask
You have
Ellen,
to pay for your airtime.
I'd like to ask Rob a question. What is your favorite time travel story? Or do you have one?
All you zombies.
Yes.
Well, that's, you know, that's a great one. Do I have a favorite one? You know, I'm not the kind of person who has single favorites exactly, but I have to say one of my favorite time travel books is Connie Willis's To Say Nothing of the Dog.
The whole trilogy.
Yes, the whole trilogy. Let me ask you, and I recommended this story to James a long time ago. Wonderful story by Mac Reynolds called Compound Interest.
Yes, I remember it.
Great story.
Yeah, I knew it then. I vaguely remember it now. It's but there's a ton of the. If people remember far back enough, there was a time in the 80s where for an entire year, all episodes of Hour of the Wolf, and I was on twice a week at that point, were about time. That's all I did was.
Really? Yeah, why?
Because I like it. Because it fascinates me. I would say, though, that one of my favorite au courant time travel pieces, not time travel, but pieces about time, is The Story of Your Life by Ted Chiang.
Which is also
the movie Arrival. It is not time travel. It's not about time travel.
I agree with you.
I would explain it, but there is no time.
I was thinking about time, and there is a great deal of traditional lore, folklore about time. And I was thinking about it recently while watching, I do not remember the title, somebody probably does, the episode of Next Gen where Jean-Luc Picard lives an entire life within 25 minutes.
Yeah, the one with the flute.
The flute. Yeah. Very interesting, by the way, because at the very end he plays that Resican flute, which shows up in another episode where he meets a woman he almost gets together with.
Except... Yeah, they did their own fanfic there, yeah.
They did?
Well, that's what I mean.
Oh, yeah. Well,
by referring to it, and this was the next generation of the next generation, they had new writers that were taking tropes that were created by the past group of writers for that TV show. So that's why I call it fanfic.
Very interesting tune that he played at the end, which is somebody asked me what it was, and they said, is it the Skyboat song? I said, no, it sounds like it, but it isn't. So this whole issue of Omni is all about time. Is that correct?
Yes.
You got it.
Yeah, that's the guiding theme.
And you did say that it is sold at Target?
It's sold at all better brick-and-mortar stores near you.
What I would say is if you're not seeing it in a store that you're in, of course, you should ask. We'd appreciate that. But also, you should ask because we've heard from some people that it might be filed in an odd spot.
Because they haven't found...
That showed it was filed among the craft magazines.
Well, congratulations. Oh, one last question. Ellen, when is Alice coming out?
Next month.
This early December.
And you're going to have a show, obviously, right, James? With the...
I don't think that I would survive if I didn't.
All right,
of course folks. I am. There's never a question about it. The only question ever was, when we'll do it?
By so the way, you are
we're back to time. And I found a lot of new good Alice songs, by the way.
Good, good, great. You are Thank having a show in December on 221?
No.
Oh, you're not doing 221 this year?
221.
221 is the Council of Elrond.
Oh, okay. You're being very obscure there. I don't know yet. We don't do it every year. We probably will.
Well, I figured you'd know what 221 was.
You were the no, one it's who... a. It's isn't that actually a book by Stephen King? I'm
know.
Serious.
Yes. Okay.
Okay.
Anyway, folks, continued good luck. I hope you sell a million copies each
thank
issue.
You.
Oh, well, thank you.
Okay.
Before you go, I would want to say, if you haven't seen the movie Primer and you like time travel,
yeah, that's
look
in,
it up.
That's in my queue. Also, since Ellen and I almost simultaneously said All You Zombies, I have in the queue of one of the streaming things, I have Amazon and Netflix, a movie called Predestination, which apparently is All You Zombies.
How is it?
I don't know.
Is it called, not Predestination, but...
I am very likely wrong. Go for it, Rob.
I've got to look it up here quickly.
It actually was
reasonably good.
Mm-hmm. I thought that the description of it and the comments that I saw from viewers who were giving away all the spoilers, saying, well, what about the unwed mother? How could he blah, blah, blah? And I'm going, wow, really actually using the mm-hmm. stuff in the story.
No, and you were correct. It is called Predestination. I don't know why I didn't think so.
Who's in it?
Ethan Hawke, Noah Taylor, and Sarah Snook.
Sarah Snook I've heard of. I believe she was in a recent popular streaming series. Ethan Hawke, of course, great actor.
It was made in Australia, but it should be easily available on some of the services.
Yeah, I know. It's on my queue. It's up there, probably to be seen this weekend. So, because I only just discovered it in the last couple of days, lying flat on my back in racking pain. But I never mentioned that before, right? No. Let me remind listeners that the telephone number here is 347-335-0818. And yes, Keith Kushner, no relation to anybody else named Kushner that we know.
Nobody else named Kushner?
I'm sure he's got Kushners. Parents. Yes, but
right. I think he's probably related to at least one person.
I hope that there may even be two, but not Jared, not Ellen. So,
and not Tony.
Not Tony. Those are the three main Kushners that I asked him about. He says Predestination is all you zombies with another layer to make the movie long enough to sell.
Yeah, it would have to be.
Yeah, it would, because it's not that long a story. Mm. The radio series By Your Bootstraps, which was done at our sister station, KPFA, and produced by Yuri, I forget his last name, but it's a good Russian last name, but actually put together by the people that I currently work for, Skyboat Media, Stefan Rutnicki, starring Richard Dreyfuss in about 7 or 8 roles, is By Your Bootstraps, which is really all you... Which one came first, that or All You Zombies? One is sort of a refinement of the other. And I think By Your Bootstraps is Heinlein's. Gee, what I should have written.
Yeah, that was first. By Your Bootstraps was first.
Okay, and then All You Zombies is the refinement of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that follows.
That's why it's the one most people would refer to, because it does do a somewhat better job.
Yeah, what just happened? My phone just disconnected from Facebook because Lister, I hope you're listening, Lister, is trying to call me, and because we're doing Facebook Live, I can't take your call. My guess is that he's downstairs and can't get in. Because, Lister, you've forgotten the code again. I can't go down those stairs because my back hurts.
Also, you're on the radio.
Yeah. What's going on here? Okay, Rick is saying something, apparently. Bose? Yeah, that's the one.
Hi, Rick. What are you up to so late?
He says, long ago, when I worked at a library, as we know, you worked at a library. Well, not everybody knows. Richard Bose is one of the best science fiction writers out there, period, bar none. Oh, it sounds like... Oh, Matt, thank you. Thank you very much. Matt will look for Lister on the street. Long ago, when I worked in the library, there was a constant back and forth between those who thought Omni was a science fiction magazine and those who thought it was a fiction magazine, and they were both right.
Right. It means one science and one fiction.
Yeah. And Todd replies to Rick, it was both, and they actually... and... a floor polish. And they did special issues that were all fiction and magazine format, and more frequently mass market paperback anthologies.
I worked on the anthologies. I did not work on the magazines.
Ah, okay. And now Fran Luck is watching. She's a Fran Luck, she's a WBAI producer who often uses the name Pirate Gentleman. Pirate Jenny. And the reason the word gentleman came into my mind is, you gentlemen will wash this. I'm scrubbing the floor.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm scrubbing the floor while you're gawking.
So, wait, so I want to know from Rick. So was the nonfiction, was the science area and the fiction area on different floors? Is that what the problem was?
I don't know. Rick was the librarian.
I know. Want the answer?
Oh, yeah. Well, okay, Rick, you can type in the answer. And we can actually see it. It's really a problem that I can't see the phone at
or
the
us.
Same time, or you, really, because I've got this monitor, which, you know, instead of a proper broadcast kind of thing that would be at a 30-degree angle, I've got a computer monitor and what's called a KVM switch, a keyboard video monitor switch, so that we're operating three computers at once. So what I do is I just ignore it all. Did you find him?
No.
He wasn't there?
No.
Okay, Lister, if you are listening, Lister, call the station. Call me on the air. That phone I can answer at 347-335-0818. He usually has some earbuds.
We can ring the bell also.
You could ring the bell. Sorry, I didn't realize your comment was wacky patrons remonstrating with you. I think they're talking to each other and not to us. Well, that's one of the cool things about chat boards. And that's a whole, we should talk. But anyway, since I worked on chat board for Omni, online. Mm-hmm. I think it was Omni Online that I, or what?
It was Omni Internet.
It was Omni Internet.
It was Omni Internet.
It
wasn't called Omni Online?
It was called Omni Online first. When the magazine existed, there was an online section that we called
on CompuServe.
And then AOL that we called Omni Online.
Yeah,
but when we went on the Internet, we did not call it Omni Online. We called it Omni Internet.
No, the reason I ask is because I was a CompuServe WizOp. That's like a SysOp, being a person that runs a board. Mm-hmm. I was a WizOp. I had the ability to create forums and delete forums. I was above them all because I was at Ziff Davis in the early days, and we had our own section on CompuServe called ZiffNet.
Oh, and you remember the old CompuServe email addresses?
Absolutely. mine was 72241,357.
Oh, that was you?
That was And I was operations director for ZiffNet, not to be confused.
Oh, that's how you got the fancy number?
Yes. And I gave out more than 300 email addresses. I gave many major people in the industry their first email address ever. Many science fiction people gravitated toward Genie, which was General Electric, the GE-nie. But I offered the same thing Genie did, which was, if you're a member of Science Fiction Writers of America, I will give you a free CompuServe account, just to get you online and chatting. Mm-hmm. So that's why I wasn't sure if I had been involved or not. But mostly what I was involved with were people at Ziff Davis computer magazines. But I never let the people at Ziff Davis forget that there was a time when they owned Amazing and Fantastic. And I was saying, hey, look, we got a computer magazine. Let's republish some Philip K. Dick stories. I looked it up. We owned the rights. We really, then those rights of a lot of those stories, Murray Leinster stories, some other great writers, fell into public domain because Ziff Davis didn't do anything with them. Bill Ziff was at that point only interested in computer magazines, and Joel Davis, these are both the sons of the founders of Ziff Davis, Joel Davis started Davis Magazines, which were Asimov's, Hitchcock, Ellery Queen, almost all the magazines that had somebody's name, whether they were fictional or not. That was usually a Davis publication.
I didn't know that. Yeah. It's very interesting.
Yeah. I found that out because I was stuck in an elevator at a con in Pittsburgh with Joel Davis at a time that I was working for Ziff Davis. But he had bought his way out. He had no interest in running computer magazines. Bill Ziff Jr. was still there. It was very cool because in those days you got your cube. I actually had an office because I was an entire division. The rest of the group were all in Cambridge with Lotus. Everybody else came from Lotus. And I was the New Yorker. And why am I talking about this? don't know. Somebody say something intelligent that isn't me rambling. It actually had to do with the fact that a lot of stories went into public domain for no good reason, even though a great publisher owned them. And Ziff Davis is basically an investment group now.
Well, we are going to be on the Penthouse website, the Omni website that is being launched by PGMI soon, is going to, in addition to having blogs of a new and very culturally relevant stories, going to slowly resurrect the best of the Omni archives. And that'll be done over time.
And there will be pieces from the current issues going on too.
Yeah, there'll be a lot of new material. Ellen is spearheading an effort in flash fiction, and maybe she wants to talk about that.
Not much.
Well, let me just say, by the way, that one of our Facebook Live people is giving a lot of great background information on Joel Davis, mm-hmm. that he bought Ellery Queen from Mercury. That makes sense.
Okay. Yeah.
In order to found Davis Publications. Davis started Davis and passed it on to Joel Davis. Well, oh, I see. So Bernie Davis, you're saying? Because Bernie Davis was the original Davis and Ziff Davis, not Joel.
Anyway, we are planning to publish maybe two flash fiction pieces a month online.
Okay. Good morning, WBAI. You're on the radio.
Hello.
Hello.
Oh, hello. Yes, let me turn my radio down here.
Thank you.
Hi. Yeah, somebody mentioned Heinlein before, and it reminded me of a question I've had for the longest time. And that is, you remember, well, I don't know if I actually read Stranger in a Strange Land. I don't think I did, but it was a big bestseller, I guess, in the 60s, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the word, there was a word that he invented, grok, yeah. G-R-O-K,
yes, right.
Right? Now, I always hoped that word would catch on because it seemed to express something. We don't really have a word that says that. And, you know, the other word that came out of the 60s from a book, which caught on immediately, probably around the world, is catch 22, right? That word was invented by Joseph Heller, and immediately
one got the zeitgeist.
Grok was around for a certain period of time, but it didn't maintain its
and really only among the cognoscenti. The other word that sort of made its way into popular culture for a while was Gran Falloon from Kurt Vonnegut, from Cat's Cradle.
I don't know that one.
What does it mean?
basically, that if you belonged to a certain group of like-minded people and you were connected in a certain way, you were a member of their Gran Falloon.
How do you spell it?
GranFalloon.
Oh,
I might have the citation. I know it's Vonnegut.
Uh-huh.
I might have the citation wrong of which book it's from. I'm thinking Cat's Cradle because that's my favorite Vonnegut, but I might be wrong about
what
that.
What year did that come out?
Oh, ouch. Let me look this up.
I don't know how I managed to miss that one.
But, I did still come across the word grok from time to time, but yeah, it's usually used kind of among sort of semi insiders.
Heard it used.
Gran Falloon, by the way, is from Cat's Cradle, 1963.
63. Maybe I missed it because I was too busy in college.
The same time as Stranger. Stranger in a Strange Land would have only been a year or two after.
Yeah, but a year or two after I was out of college, so I had time to actually read things other than my textbooks. but the thing about Grok is this. I did hear someone use it about 5 years ago. There was he was a political advisor, and he was from Seattle, so I think it might be a West Coast thing. He used it on the radio. He didn't bother to define it. He didn't put quotes around it. He assumed that everyone listening would know what he meant. And then
that they would grok it.
Yeah, right, exactly. And then I heard it used again about 2 years ago. Jeff Bridges, you know, the actor,
yeah,
was on this, you know, NYC has their trivia quiz show on the weekends, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the
yes.
news trivia.
I'm supposed to say, oh, them? I don't like anything they do. It's a great show.
It's funny. Sometimes it's silly. They overdo the sex stuff, yeah, I think, a little
yes,
bit.
They do, in the great tradition of British shows like that.
Yeah. Also, it's an age thing, I think, because everybody on the show is like over 50 and 60, and sex is still like anxiety-provoking for them. So, I mean, I am myself, so this is not an ageist thing I'm saying here, you know. I think younger people are cooler about it, you know, so they don't go, you know. But anyway, So Jeff Bridges was the guest, and he was hawking his book. He had a book. He's a Buddhist now, and he's practicing Buddhism with a friend of his who I think was originally Jewish, and he wrote the book.
You can be both.
What?
You can be both. You can be a Jew and a Buddhist. You can be a Jew and a witch.
Well, you know, they call them Judists.
Well, but he doesn't practice, his friend doesn't practice Judaism, I don't think. He just practices Buddhism. Anyway.
Well, practicing Judaism, there's such a thing as secular, being a secular Jew.
Yeah.
I am a secular Jew.
Right. Me too.
There you go.
So his friend is the practicing Buddhist, and he's a practicing Buddhist, and he wrote a book about it, and he used the word grok, and he just dropped it into the sentence. Again, people who didn't know the word probably heard it go by and didn't know what he said. But so I'm wondering, and he's from California, of course, and the other guy said who used it was from Seattle. So do you think it's an East Coast, West Coast thing? Do they use it out there, maybe?
He is the dude.
Yeah.
So I think
that's true.
Maybe in Dudeville, grok is still a thing. Maybe it is a West Coast thing.
I remember the word being used all the time when I was on the East Coast in New York City.
Outside of science fiction circles?
Yes.
Okay.
When I was in high school. Maybe that ages me, but I remember that word.
What year was that, if you don't mind saying?
No, I'm so old. It was
concurrent to what we've been discussing.
I finished high school in 72.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
They were using it then, huh?
I recall it. I read that book, and I had a lot of friends that read that book. I was just a kid. Yeah, in my mind, it's still a very commonly used word, although I don't really use it. Every once in a while, I actually might use it.
I always want to use it, but I'm afraid nobody will know what I'm saying. And I
well,
we
let's put it back in the vernacular.
Well, that's
exactly. Let's make it. Let's start a movement.
We need a famous person, like if the president of the United. If that chance.
Oh no.
The president of the United
yes.
States,
all we have to do is get him to tweet it.
Right. He should say. You
There's
know, the
no way he could understand it.
The things that are happening in the world now, I can't even grok it. You know.
Our predator
and
chief.
Everybody will go run look it up, and then people will start.
He would misspell. He'd probably write grok. He wouldn't understand what it means.
No, he wouldn't know what it means.
No,
people
really
don't even use grok anymore. Sad.
That's really devastating, right?
That would be.
Yeah, we need somebody famous, somebody who has a lot of, you know, like remember when Bill Clinton used the term gin up? Now, he didn't invent it. That's a Southern expression, but
yeah.
Northerners
yeah.
had to scramble. And Bill, the guy who used to write the word column in the Times, wrote a whole article on it. Gin up. It's sort of like short for engine, like to fire up or rev up something.
Oh, this seems like something that you could probably get Obama to do. That if you're gonna
yeah,
go
yeah,
high profile,
it doesn't have to be a current.
Yeah. I think Obama's a better bet.
Yeah, I think so too.
Definitely.
I thought gin up.
And he's literate.
Something about drinking gin. I had no idea how to do it.
No, I think it's kind of like the origin would be like cotton gin, which is short for cotton engine.
Yes,
so
yes.
You gin up something, you rev
something
it up,
going.
You get it going. You know, I think that's it. Anyway, it was interesting talking to you guys.
Thank you. It was interesting talking to you, and
okay.
I absolutely agree that there are certain words that we should. bring back to the vernacular.
Maybe it didn't catch on because it's awkward. You know, the harsh sounds, the Anglo-Saxon sounds, if it were a cuter word, maybe people would use it. I don't know.
Maybe so. But what we really need to do, since Omni magazine was such a thing of the 80s, is you need product placement in Stranger Things.
Right.
That, you know, to get that going for people.
A movie. Maybe someone could use it in a movie, a famous movie.
Yeah, except that Stranger Things really has its head in the 80s. Uh-huh. And
it would fit perfectly.
Yeah, it really would. Do any of us know anybody involved in that show?
Well, I work on a Netflix show, so I guess I'm only a couple degrees of separation away from Stranger Things.
It could very well be. It's the Duffer Brothers, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to hang up and let somebody else come on.
Okay, thank you very much for your call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. It is so rare when an intelligent woman calls up that I just don't let them get off the phone, you know? It's like, oh, thank God. let's see. Where's Lister? 9 minutes to the end of the show, and which means 5 minutes till I have to play my outro. But to get back on topic for this morning, guess what? Omni magazine is once again on your newsstand, and you need to go and either relive the glory that was Omni or live the glory of the latest version, the latest vision that Omni has.
Or find out what you were missing.
Or, yeah, better yet, go to the library where Rick Bowes worked and... that would be NYU, and look at some of the past issues. I'm sure
there's some beautiful art in the new issue.
Really,
it wouldn't be Omni if it didn't have it.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
Who's the art editor?
That was the other thing I wanted to mention. That was a collaborative effort. But I mean, there's some really beautiful portfolios in here. And when we were talking about sort of the limits of imagination. Thank you for reminding me. I want to talk about the art also. We have a portfolio by this kind of surrealist photographer named Eric Johansson, which is just absolutely spectacular. And, you know, the idea is that the magazine should also be kind of a visual journey of exploration as well.
Yeah, there was a magazine that predates Omni called Future Life and edited by Barbara Krasnoff. And they often did, or she was an editor, but at any rate, they often... Every issue, they did features on the great science fiction artists of the day, including Chesley Bonestell or whoever, and they had something that other Penthouse publications had, a fold-out, except with science fiction art that they were featuring in there. It was gorgeous stuff that they did, but unfortunately, Future Life didn't last.
Didn't have a future life.
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah. It ran about a year. It was from the same people that published Starlog.
Right.
And they went totally for the media and not as much for Jin. Okay. I'm looking at the Facebook Live things. What's a lot of fun, by the way, is that after the show is over, people will watch this tomorrow and the day after, and then they will comment.
Is it on, can you see the comments on Facebook? It's on the page?
Yes. Okay. And if you put it full screen, you can you'll see them as they appear during the show. Mm-hmm. So you will hear somebody say something, and you will see the comment as it came along. Right. If you do it on less than a full window, all the comments are there at once, like Story of Your Life by Ted Chiang. So you can... there we go again.
It all comes back to time.
It really does. It really does, which is why I featured it so often on Hour of the Wolf and continue to. But I did that largely... I just took a year you know, of, you know, approximately 100 shows, because I was on twice a week in those days, Fridays and Saturdays. And it was great. It was great. And when it was done, I was still getting letters. Remember letters, people? I was getting letters from listeners saying, oh, you didn't do this story. You could have been doing that story. What was the William Ten story? Is it the Brooklyn Bridge Project or the Brooklyn Project, I think it was, where people are swinging through time left and right, and it causes comical issues ensue as a result. Well, Lister isn't here. His time, the normal time for me to go off the air would be in 30 seconds because, well, it's time. It's so let's get back to literally the issue at hand. Somebody besides me, please talk. It's Omni Magazine.
Yes. And we have new stories by Nancy Kress, Maureen McHugh, and Rich Larson.
Three great writers.
Yeah. Rich is very prolific. Time. Rich is new, and he's really prolific. He's Canadian, and he writes science fiction, fantasy, and horror.
He's new?
Oh, yeah.
Because I've gotten...
In the last few years. He's extremely prolific, but I've only... I mean, I've started seeing stories from him around 3 years ago.
I've been getting emails from him for longer than that, but mm-hmm. I think that's because at one time he lived in the area and he was a listener to WBAI, specifically to Simon Locally's radio show.
Okay.
You remember Simon. And he used to follow mm-hmm. me from 7 to 9 a.m. Yeah. with his... Mm-hmm. show about the lowlifes like James mm-hmm. Joyce and mm-hmm. stuff like that. Who wrote a great deal about time, mm-hmm. actually. Right there in Ulysses, the whole nighttime sequence keeps rebooting itself. And there's a lot of time slippage. And Margot Adler's radio show, when she stopped doing Hour of the Wolf and she started another show, mm-hmm. it was called Unstuck in Time, mm-hmm. another Vonnegut reference. That one is Slaughterhouse-Five, of course. And I think that has entered the vernacular, to use your phrase.
Lost did an episode that used that phrase of unstuck in time. I recently moderated a panel with Carlton Cuse on it, and he mentioned that it was his. The favorite episode that he worked on of his whole time on Lost, mm-hmm. about sort of time skipping and being unstuck.
Yeah. By the way, somebody told me Brooklyn Project is correct by William Tin.
I love having this hive mind. Yeah.
It really is very cool. But the thing is, as I say, it keeps going. I can go home now and see comments on last week's show. They're still coming in on Matt Kressel and my conversation on the new Blade Runner film. It was really unusual that Matt and I totally agreed mm-hmm. on a movie. Mm-hmm. Totally. Mm-hmm. We geeked out. Mm-hmm. We just totally geeked out. So, one by one, again, starting with anybody who happens to be on Skype, for the heck of it, tell us who you are and what you're doing with Omni, and anything else you care to mention.
The Skype visitor is Robert Kilheffer. I'm one of the executive editors of the new Omni. And my main beat is culture, but as Pam said earlier, it's really a group effort all around, so we do venture into each other's territories as well.
I'm Ellen Datlow. I'm the fiction editor.
Oh, well, that's
of
nice.
Omni.
You see, that's what happens with editors. They say, okay, what can I do to make this more succinct?
Well, that's
and use fewer words and say
well,
more.
Well, I hate getting 280, whatever we've gotten for Twitter. I love being succinct, and it's really annoying
now that it's 280, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it doesn't tell you at 140. If I knew what the old, you know, if I could tell where the old count was, I would just keep it to that.
Yeah.
There's
alternative software that lets you access Twitter. There's two mm-hmm. good ones, and they will keep the count for mm-hmm. you and mm-hmm. let you know if it's a link. They don't count it. It's a zero. Pam.
Hey, I'm Pam Weintraub. I'm the editor of of Omni, and I cover
the waterfront.
I cover my actual personal beat is the life sciences, biomedicine, neuroscience. When I write, that's what I cover. But we all dip into everything here. So
it seems like that would be, in and of itself, the life sciences could open up a whole area of issues. You could divide that up in many ways.
Well, you've got huge revolutions going on in life sciences. You've got regenerative medicine. You've got
cloning.
You've got
CRISPR gene editing.
That's right.
Oh God, yes.
Yeah.
People growing little brains in human brains and rat bodies.
Yes. Tiny little human brains. I saw that.
Horrors like that.
I saw that in Quartz, which is a great source for news. I didn't get to read that story because, well, I've been screaming in pain this week for no particular reason. But,
Right. This is a fascinating thing. This may turn up in a future issue of Omni. So what they're doing is they're growing three-dimensional clumps of brain tissue, neurons that actually make connections, just like the neurons in your brain, and using them to model neurological disease, and starting to raise just the beginnings of ethical questions of, like, at what point does your experimental device start to become, you know, if you're building it out of human brain tissue, at what point, you know, how far can you let it grow before it's no longer an ethical experiment?
Right.
And who are you?
Your role as executive editor?
I'm a three-dimensional ball of neurological tissue rattling around in the head.
People are listening to the rebroadcast then you're four-dimensional.
Yes, but I'm also Corey Powell. I am the other executive editor in the mix, part of the what is it? Is it a quadrumphrate? Triumvirate is three.
Quartet?
That's too mundane.
The Alexandrian Quartet.
No, Quartet is too mundane.
Okay.
I sort of like Quartet.
Okay,
Quadra something.
Okay, I'm the fourth
member of the Uber Quad
of the quadrangle.
No, there are quadrangles. I'm thinking Uber Quad, having nothing to do with cars.
sure, why not?
The quad over.
Anyway, my background is kind of in far out astronomy, space, physics, those kinds of things.
And people can find your blog in.
So I blog for Discover Magazine. My blog is called Out There. It's about things that are out there, and that are out there. So if you just go to discovermagazine.com/out there, you'll find my blog, and I'm on Twitter more than I probably should be.
Now I think that's true for all the Twitterers.
Are you getting away magazines?
Not on the air.
Okay.
No, that was, you see, if we were still pitching, we could have done premiums, but we're not doing that now.
Okay.
So, there's no way to do fulfillment unless the people where you work are willing to do the fulfillment. And that gets into a hairy question of, who gets them?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if we had somebody, the usual is if you subscribe to WBAI right now for the amount of blank, we will gift you in return.
Got
we will give you a free. That's how the legal
language
has to occur for that. So up until
maybe during your next pitch, we can arrange to have the issue at the time.
Yeah, actually, yes, and. Featured. Given that we go into fundraising drives about every 3 weeks for a 5-week period.
And our next issue is in February, right?
February, that's right. Early February.
And
that's the AI issue.
Can we tell people now what that theme shall be?
AI.
That's the artificial intelligence issue.
Already said. Okay.
Right.
Yes, but I have the memory of goldfish.
And after that are going to be many exciting things.
Yeah, of that,
TK.
Of that I have no doubt. Yeah, people outside publishing probably don't know what TK is.
Oh, sorry, to come. And yes. Hopefully our website will be up very soon.
That's KOME.
That's right.
We should say.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, we want to mention for people who are just dropping in, go to the Omni Facebook page. It's Real Omni on Facebook, and sign up for the mailing list so you can be apprised of how to get subscriptions, where to pick up the print magazine, how to order it, how to get a digital subscription, when the website launches. All of these things will...
Plus,
and you should buy an issue every month so that you end up with three copies of the same issue.
Sure.
Because it's quarterly.
Right, and then you give some away to your friends.
Yes,
or your family.
Exactly, yeah. Vote early, vote often. And
Christmas is coming up, also Hanukkah, Kwanzaa.
And Saturnalia.
Saturnalia. And, you know, it's a good Thanksgiving present if you give presents at Thanksgiving.
Yeah. I have a friend who gave birth yesterday, so she had to give the baby.
Congratulations.
Baby shower gift?
Yeah. Babies love Omni in our experience.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's, yeah, exactly.
Smart babies, at least.
Yes, well, it makes them more omniscient. There are all the different ways that we can use the word omni. As long as we're killing a little time until Lister shows up, there was
he still locked out or something?
He's not here is all I know. And he was calling me. You know, I should probably end the Facebook Live at this point, and that way my phone can actually take phone calls again, mm-hmm. because he was trying to call me earlier.
Uh-oh.
Probably, it's usually I'm stuck on the G train, and I tell him that's because you took the G train. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what happens when you take that train.
Won't learn, will he?
No, he... He doesn't. Wasn't there a thing about Nova?
Yes, originally Omni. The original Omni was called Nova for like 5 seconds before it ever came out. And they found, the Guccionis found out that Nova was, I guess, trademarked by the TV show.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they had to come up with another name.
And they basically used the same font set, I believe.
I think
that they had already come up with for their version of
Nova. They love this because look at this. It's 1-2-3-0. 0-1-2-3.
Yeah. Oh, see? I had 0-3-2-1. Not caught that.
So if you turn Omni sideways, it's 0-3-2-1.
That's right.
That's very cool. So there'll be an alternate launch date of March 21st. In the year zero. Yeah.
Yes.
In the year zero. We'll make a point of that. We'll all be there. We're going to hold a con, OmniCon, at that point.
That's like once we get time travel actually figured out, we'll go to year zero and do it.
Exactly.
All right. We'll see. We will have seen you then.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I had a wonderful Will time, or something like that. There.
That's like that party that Stephen Hawking put together. Right, was it the British Museum or something? Where he...
Yes.
He sent out invitations only after the date.
Yeah. Oh. Okay, Paul Levinson, now you're tuning in? Well, you can watch the... Okay, I'm going to end the Facebook Live feed at this point because A, my battery is going to run out. B, we're well past our time slot. And C, Lister is probably trying to call me to say why he isn't here and if he will be. In a little while, if he's not here shortly, I'm going to start a recorded program. And
we could read from Omni. We could read from Omni.
Oh, yeah, we could do a dramatic reading.
Or you could if you're game.
Or you could put on the Wagner's Ring Cycle or something.
We do that every President's Day. We do. We do. I produced it twice. One year I did it with Tony Randall.
Wow.
As a guest host and thing. He was just so ebullient. He was totally into it. He really was. The other person I discussed the ring with at great length was, are you ready, Christopher Lee. Mm. Yeah, he told me this is when I interviewed him when The Man with the Golden Gun came out. And of all his works, one of the least. And he said, well, I didn't want to be an... He had this voice. I'm not going to come anywhere near even trying to approximate it. He said that he had always wanted to be a baritone in the opera. He always, of all the roles that he ever wanted to do, I think that was the question I asked, and hadn't done, he wanted to be Votan. And
I think he would have been a great Votan.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. But he didn't quite have the vocal training, so he went into cinema. Yeah.
Closest he got was Saruman.
Yeah, yeah.
Almost,
yes. And by the way, thank you for pronouncing it correctly. Many people do not. Many people say Saruman.
Really?
People in Peter Jackson films, I believe.
Huh. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. Really? Just as they don't get the name of that... nobody gets the name right for Smeagol. And I mean his common name. It should
right.
be...
Yeah.
I always thought it was Smeagol.
It was Smeagol, Smeagol, whichever it is. Uh-huh. I'm talking about his other name, which should be pronounced Gulm. Mm-hmm. Because Tolkien describes it as a gulping sound from his throat that he became a thing when he was eating fish. Mm-hmm. So it's not Gollum, it's Gulm. Mm-hmm. Is the way to pronounce that. Mm-hmm. And Gandalf, not Gandalf. And my source for that, and I tell this story all the time, is I got to talk to Tolkien on the phone. I made a phone call.
And asked him how to pronounce
it. That was your question?
Yes. Yes, I was assigned by Baird Cyrils. We were doing the Council of Elrond, which I usually broadcast in December, which is what our first caller, Robert, Robert, was asking about. And... and to get that reading right, that was produced by myself, David Marks, and Margot Adler, with Baird Cyrils as the narrator, only we called them readers in them days. And Baird, just in order to give me sort of like a mind bleep, said, here, call this number in England at Oxford, and there's a Don there, and he can tell you how to pronounce it. Mm-hmm. And I call, and it's Professor Tolkien on the end of the phone. I was flubbergasted. Had I known, I would have recorded the damn call, mm-hmm. because we had the capabilities there and then. But I just got him to ask him, and he's Gandalf, of course, rhymes with half, like half a sixpence. Only said half a sixpence. So that's maybe where Gandalf comes from, because he would have also said, you know, that costs 6.5 pence. He had that kind, I don't know what his accent was exactly. Other Tolkien scholars could. There you bleeping are. Oh, okay, well, we're still on Facebook Live, so people get to see you and all that.
I was on the mayor's train.
Yeah.